He's kind of like the Joe Rogan of the hospitality industry right now.
I think probably one of the best traits of a good concierge is adaptability. Every day we're thrown something new, and arguably we have to make the impossible possible. And so that specific, I would say a trait more than maybe a skill, but a trait of being adaptable, being flexible, being like, okay, we're just going to figure it out. For those that really have that, they've been able to kind of make the best out of this year.
Welcome to Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast where we discuss all things hospitality, hotels, and business. You can find us online at slicktalkthepodcast.com and on every podcast listening platform.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast. What an exciting episode, because we have the one, the only Sarah Dandashi Dandelion. I'm just kidding. Sarah Dandashi on here from Ask a Concierge. So Sarah, all the way from Lisbon right now, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm so excited to talk to you because we have been chatting online for some time now. It's great to, from Clubhouse, LinkedIn, you name it. So excited and honored to be on. So thank you again so much. And yeah, coming to you live from Lisbon.
I know, that's so crazy. The ability that podcasting gives us to have these conversations is quite incredible, I have to say. And you understand that yourself, being a podcaster. The first time I ever heard of you was from LinkedIn, because you shared the episode with David Lund, the hotel financial coach. Yeah. And I was like, who is this Sarah Dandashi lady? And like this research. And then when I ran into you guys on Clubhouse, it just was like, all right, yeah, I have to get you on the show because I saw you get to interact. And like, granted, I've listened to your podcast a little bit. Now I've like figured out who you are. So for the audience on my end who may not know, Tell us about who you are, what your background is, and give us a little sneak peek into your life.
Yeah, definitely. So, I'm Sarah Dandashi. I am behind the brand Ask a Concierge. For context, I've actually worked in the hospitality industry for over 15 years, and of at least the 15 years as a hotel concierge. I was part of the organization, and still am part of the organization, Le Clé d'Or, which is the Gold Keys of Concierge. And so, like I always say, that I kind of have grown up on the front lines of travel. And, so that's my hospitality background. I've worked at Four Seasons, Fairmont, Peninsula, and then more boutique hotels. And a couple years ago, I ended up, what I like to say is going beyond the concierge desk, and I started doing video blogs. And that's where Ask a Concierge was born. So I started talking about what to eat, see, and do in Los Angeles. And honestly, naively at the time, I was like, okay, who's going to want to pay attention to this? Like, I don't know, it's going to be so boring. And very quickly realized that the content that I was creating was not only useful for travelers coming to Los Angeles, but even Angelenos found it interesting. They were all really, you know, they were like, wow, now I know what I can do on the weekend, or I know about new restaurants, whatever it is. So it was really, I like to say, you know, in my life, and I think all of us in all of our lives, we have these moments, these happy accidents that kind of just happen. Yeah. And you're like, whoa, so glad. And really creating Ask a Concierge, even the name, I was like, I guess I'll just call it Ask a Concierge, all kind of came together so happenstance, but it was one of those like lucky moments that, oh, I think I'm onto something here. Mm-hmm. And now it's grown. And I do work with a lot of big travel companies, sort of as a travel influencer, dare I say, and then, do news segments as a travel expert, and then also work with different hotel companies like I am right now in Lisbon as a hospitality consultant. So a lot of different verticals to my business now, but it's been an exciting journey.
Well, I love the aspect of the concierge part, just because when you're in hospitality consulting and helping brands and hotels and properties, I think the concierge touch has been kind of missing in some areas and some segments of hotels. And so it's like the concierge really is that relationship builder with the community, with the local businesses, with these attractions that and experiences that are really what people are there to do. So I think that you highlighting that really helps with just where, especially where the industry is today.
Well, I mean, I think it's also arguably, it's like how does like the hotel, you know, or a hotelier mm-hmm. like relate to the city, the destination, you know, there's mm-hmm. that's a big part of, you know, being a concierge and then also kind of having your finger in everything in the hotel as well too.
Yeah, exactly. You're kind of like the liaison of everything. It's like, all right, we're just going to make all the dots connect. I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's see, when did you start Ask a Concierge? Like, how long has this been in creation and flourishing from when you were actually a concierge on property?
So yeah, I started this in like middle of 2012. So now it's going on almost 9 years. I've been doing it for quite some time. Now keep in mind, it did start with the social media aspect, the content creation and all of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a side hustle. It was my side mm-hmm. hustle. And I put all my money into it. And I mean, I was like, I would work to like earn money to then pay a videographer, you know, when I was doing stuff that I wasn't getting paid for. And I mean, I probably took the long routes and maybe I could have done it faster, you know, but, I was probably shelling out my own funds for this dream that I knew was something for at least 5 years. And then started making money a little bit by little bit. And then I got to a point in 2019, I was like, okay, I'm at the point where I think I'm actually losing money coming to work. And the benefit of being in a hotel and also the benefit of working, you know, my final property that I've been working at as a concierge was the London West Hollywood. And I say that because I'm forever grateful for them because they have been incredible. Like if I needed to do photos, I could do photos like on property because they understood it was extra advertising for them. Mm. And they really worked with me. And I was really lucky that they also worked with me with my schedule. And so I got to this point where I was like, okay, well, I think I'm actually losing money coming to work, as in like, I'm just getting so tied up. So let me just, when it comes to starting your own business, it's like training wheels. So let me like try and like go down to part-time hours. And I did, and I ended up still getting more work. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm onto something here. And then at the start of 2020, I had already made the decision that in 2020, whether it was probably the second quarter would be when I would probably leave the hotel entirely. Well, lo and behold, the pandemic happened and I got furloughed and I was like, okay. And I had this moment that I was like, okay, we're furloughed. And, you know, based in Los Angeles too, where a lot of things were closed down, certainly in mm-hmm. bigger cities, things are far more locked down and numbers, occupancy numbers are far lower than I think like resort destinations and open, you know, outdoor destinations and that. So, and that, you know, basically was furloughed for quite some time. And in that time, you know, I had two things. One was, how do I stay relevant on social media when I'm not traveling? You know, and that's where I kind of like, I took a look at the landscape and I was like, nobody's really talking about what's happening in the industry. So that's when I started doing my travel industry updates. And just from doing that, next thing you know, I started booking more TV and started getting more opportunities, which just goes to show you, if you really can play the game right on social media and see where there are gaps and you can fill that gap, it can benefit you. So that was the one part, is like, how do I keep the travel content going when I'm not traveling from my living room? And then the second part is, what do I do about the hotel? So first, when it came to travel content, I basically like looked at the landscape and saw what was out there. And there was a gap. Nobody was really covering or talking about travel industry updates, like what's happening in the industry. So I started doing those. And those videos ended up really gaining a lot of traction. And I got a lot of opportunities from that as well, too, from doing TV segments. And it helped me connect with a lot more people within the industry as well too, which has been so incredible. But then the second part of it was then, okay, well, it was already my goal to kind of like take the training wheels off and ride solo and do my own thing. And I knew that there was going to be a time that the hotel was going to call me back. And what was my answer going to be? Because as we all know, it's scary to take that leap, and you have to have that faith in yourself. But I made the decision that I was like, okay, when the time comes, you know, I'll, you know, take a step back and make sure that you know, from my position that at least one of my colleagues has a position to go back to. So I ended up making the decision to go off of being furloughed and being ultimately laid off. And, you know, two of my colleagues have now been able to work. And I'm happy that I was able to do that. But then also for myself, just to be like, okay, let's do this, even if it's in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, I think you and I definitely connect on that because it's the scariest thing. Especially, but I think it's super cool that like you just gave that opportunity, not like it was life or death, for, so to say, for your colleagues, but just giving them the opportunity to actually go back because they didn't have like a fallback plan. They didn't have a side hustle possibly that were they're wanting to pursue the full time. So to kind of take that step and trust in yourself, but then also be like, hey, this is probably a good opportunity for you guys to get back to work as well. So I think that's super cool. My story in the beginning of 2019 was kind of like the similar thing. I was like in September, like, okay, I'm going to quit my job as a hotel manager and pursue podcasting. Like I love this. I am losing money to come to work, especially on salary. Like you're working a ton of hours. I lived right next to the hotel. So I was there.
Yeah.
Every waking moment of the day, all the time. Yeah, exactly. Like I literally was condo, hotel, like walking just like two steps away. And so it was always there. And I had different plans as well to travel and to do all these things with the podcast. And then, you know, February, March hit and we're all like, oh, great. So
JK.
Yeah, just kidding. But you have like that step. I think you can probably relate to this is like you've already taken that step to go solo and you don't like I'm pretty sure now that we've been in this for I don't know 10 11 12 months almost that we're like okay we could probably go to a hotel or find a destination that's hiring and like get back into it but I think I don't know about you but it kind of felt like all right this is the time to really like it's sink or swim and we're showing that we can swim
100% and that and it made sense. I mean, so many things made sense. When I think back on like the speed in which I was living life, which to be honest, I will probably go back to that speed just because that's how I operate. But I mean, that, you know, for 2019, for the latter half, for much of 2019, the first half, if I was in LA, I was working. And if I was not working, I was not in LA. I'm talking about getting off of planes from East Asia, going home, putting on my suit, slapping on the name tag and going to work. Like there's only so long that you can do that, you know? And and by the way, I mean, no regret, no other option. Like this is how I have to do it. And I'm so grateful that that I had the flexibility and I had the support of my colleagues in my hotel. So, okay, yeah, it might be work every single day, but if you are trying to build something that, you know, you are working for yourself or you have a bigger dream, you do have to work every single day, as I know you know.
Yeah, and I was just on a panel recently and we're talking about, it was more like education towards people in the hospitality, like going through schooling and trainings to become a hospitality expert, whether they're in rooms and food and beverage or whatever, that they're just going to like hotel schools. And it was like, we were talking about there's so many different ways to actually be in the hospitality or travel industry other than the typical hotel school, front desk, bellman, food and beverage, catering, all that type of stuff. There's so many opportunities and stories like yours is a great example. And I love that because it's like, you can really take something you're passionate about, something that most people, when they think of travel or hospitality, don't really think of, but is super cool and is actually a big, big place in what we do. So I think this is a great example and story of all that. But I have a question because I'm new to the concierge side. Like I was a great front desk agent. I could definitely connect people to the local like scene and community, but you talked about an organization. Now, can you describe what this organization is that you're a part of? And then also, is that where you got your training? Like what is this extensive concierge background of yours that got you your wings basically?
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. I'll first address training.
Okay.
On the job.
Okay, perfect.
Totally on the job. So I moved to LA. I had previously worked at the Four Seasons in Washington, DC, while I was going to school at Georgetown. And when I moved to LA, I was like, hotels make sense. I'll apply for a job there. My background was more F&B. So I applied as like a cocktail server, bartender. And the general manager was like, I think you'd make a good concierge. And I knew a little bit about concierge at that point, but mind you, I was like 22, at a 5-star, 5-diamond hotel in Beverly Hills.
Did you go back to that general manager and say thank you for recommending a concierge position?
100%. I have gone back to him. And in fact, when I won my award, I actually won the award Best Young Concierge in the World in 2015. I sent him a really special note because I'm like, there's no way I would be on this concierge journey if it weren't for him. But I, at the time when he offered me the position, I was like, I'll be really honest with you. I just moved to LA. I know how to get from my house to here and the gas station, but I'm really good with maps. Really, like that was like my thing to get me the job. I'm good with maps. And he kind of chuckled. He was like, you'll be fine. He's like, you got this. And so I learned on the fly, and I had amazing mentors along the way. At that time, that was the L'Hermitage Beverly Hills, fantastic colleagues that really just helped me. And then I ended up moving to the Peninsula Beverly Hills. And you know, as much as I learned at the L'Hermitage, which is an incredible property, the Peninsula was like, dude, that was next level. And the training, and you know, my former boss there is an exceptional human being, an incredible boss, so cool, calm, collected. He is like the man for everything. And I've always aspire to be like him, you know, in a sense, you know, that he's just like, he gets it. And so I'm so thankful for the mentorship opportunities. Now, with that being said, Lake Clé d'Or is the elite organization of professional concierge. It is an international organization. And, you know, there's a requirement. You have to be a concierge for a certain number of years. You have to have two sponsors that sponsor you into it. So it's getting into it is a feat in and of itself. It's not easy. They don't accept just anyone who's been a concierge. There's a lot of specific requirements. And that was another monumental moment for me in my career, in that it really, you know, reinvigorated my passion for the profession. And so that's what Lake Clé d'Or is, that elite professional organization of hotel concierge. And then in 2015, I won Best Young Concierge in the World. And by the way, I was representing the US, so go Team USA. I was actually the first time that somebody from the US had won, so it was a lot of special moments.
Yeah, that's super cool. So you're like really leading the charge in this like unique niche of travel and hospitality. I think that's super cool. And can you explain like a little bit of, I think you talked on like on the job training just a little bit, and can you explain how common that is for a lot of people? Because a lot like even podcast listeners who maybe are like in tech or different areas of hospitality, like, what kind of training and professional like background do you have? It's like, I learned on the fly. Exactly. So, yeah.
Well, it's interesting. So there are obviously two routes that you can go. The one, you know, would be if you go to one of the hotel schools, there are some phenomenal ones. I mean, I happen to be in Europe right now, not too far away. You have the school in Lausanne, which is really famous. My cousin went there, who got me into hotels. You also have Les Roches, which is another one that actually the general manager of this hotel went to. And then you have, I think, which is what most of us are, is that you just learn on the fly and hope that you either are in, you know, I started at a Four Seasons, and I have to say that was such an incredible way to get introduced to hospitality, because they have a very structured training program and onboarding program through HR. And so that was such a perfect way to get my feet wet and to know what certain standards were. And then, you know, so certainly it's the onboarding experience when you get to a hotel, but then the second part is the mentorship. And hopefully, you know, you do have some incredible colleagues that are seasoned and gracious with their knowledge, and you can learn from them as well too. So I mean, I've always been of that school of thought, because that's what I did. But, you know, there's always a lot that you can learn in hotel school. But I always, and I'm sure you can agree with this, is that the number of times you may have seen people come out of hotel school, and even still, they have to learn on the job. Yes, they might have the technical skills from the school, but they still have wide eyes, like, oh, figuring it out for the first time in person. So.
Yeah, when they have 600 check-ins that day and they're like, nobody taught me how to do this. No, I totally get it. And I remember, like, see, there's, like, that's one thing, like, I'm not against hotel schools. I'm not against, like, I'm a big ambassador for hotel.school. It's basically a bunch of Swiss management hoteliers and educationers really just created this online platform for people during the pandemic to, like, really get, like, upskills and reskills. But there's always this conversation. People are like, oh, do you think I need to go to hotel school in order to become good at hospitality? I was like, I'll go back to my first interview. I never was at a Four Seasons. I wish I actually kind of did, but I'm glad I started off with an autograph collection with Marriott. Mm-hmm. And still, like you said, great standards on the beginning. They really, like, if you want to get really brought into the industry, go with a property or a brand that has, like, that great sense of service and onboarding their people with that hospitality mindset. But go back to my first interview. He was like, do you have any experience in the hospitality industry? I was like, no. No hotel, no experience, like, not at all. He's like, all right, how are you with people? And I was like, I'm great with people. I love people. Yeah. And he goes, awesome. How are you with like software and checking stuff? I'm like, I probably will be a little rusty, but if you teach me that part, I will pick up really quickly. And he goes, awesome. Because if you answered the first question wrong, I wouldn't even ask you the second question, because I can't teach you how to take care of people, how to be a servant, how to really be, you know, anticipating of people's needs and all this other stuff. Like, I can't teach that. That's something that you have to have. And so I think the hotel school is great if you have that. You can learn everything else. But if you don't have that part, I feel like you're going to suffer and not have an enjoyable time in hotels or hospitality, because there's a lot that goes into it. And especially the wide-eyed look that you just described.
Totally, right?
Yeah. Well, so I remember there's the art of concierge. I want to get your opinion on that right now, especially during pandemic. Like, yeah. Do you think, like, can you describe what you think this is going to look like when it comes to concierge services? Is that a smaller niche in the hospitality industry? Are concierge really popular around other places? Like, I'm just not familiar with it in the US. We had a concierge on my first property, but she ended up becoming front desk. So it's like, I just want to make sure, like, I want to get your overall perspective on this.
Yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to, you know, as far as like concierge, first of all, it's a tough time right now. If you don't have guests coming in, you know, a lot of hotels have been actually looking like, okay, well, why have the concierge working, you know? And it's not to disrespect them. In fact, a lot of these managers should actually look to keep their concierge on and maybe be like, okay, maybe we'll have the concierge help do front desk, because the concierge are the ones that know what's open. They have their finger on the pulse of the city. And, you know, it's going to be interesting, I think, when we come out of this, just in operations in general, because in all of these conversations, and I think maybe you've even noticed this, but like, especially on Clubhouse and this, everybody's talking about like sales and occupancy and this, but it's like, okay, well, how are you going to manage like the operations? Like, you have a staff of this many now, and then you're going to have to get this many people on board really quickly. And that's tricky. I'm not saying I have an answer to that, but I'm saying that it's something that, you know, these managers should definitely be, and owners should be keeping in mind, and that, like, you don't want to eliminate everybody or just have everybody on furlough and then have them come back and be ready to go like 0 to 60. Yeah. So coming out of it's going to be really tricky, because I do think that at some point there is going to be this, like, I call it the rubber band effect, like letting go of the rubber band, and it's like, boom, travel's back. And before that, it'll be up and down, of course. But
revenge travel, like we were talking about, I think we both have kind of talked about that in different rooms and stuff. And so I think that's a great example of the rubber band effect, like you're saying.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely the rubber band effect. I mean, so that's obviously like one part of it, but then it's like, okay, let's talk about the guest experience and what are guests craving. Well, what are a lot of us doing? A lot of us are kind of quarantining, or, you know, like we're not seeing as many people as we normally, we might not be even going out to restaurants. So it's going to be really interesting that I actually feel like people are going to be craving the human interaction. Yes, they want it safe. Yes, they want it clean, but they're really going to be craving that human and one-on-one interaction. So I actually feel like, you know, it will be very beneficial to have the concierge on, not only because they know the city, they're going to be really on top of their game as far as what's coming back, when, regulations, et cetera, but then also to be that extra experience. And I think that that's what's always been so tricky for managers, you know, depending on their background, is that sometimes they can't put, you know, a specific number on the value of the concierge. But what is the value? The value is, it's that extra, that special sauce. It might be, you know, the concierge can be the key person that takes the experience from being not a great experience to a memorable one, one that they talk about forever. The concierge can also form those relationships with guests that they end up being repeat and repeat and repeat guests. So there's so much that, you know, the concierge bring to the table. You know, again, I think it's just going to be murky waters ahead, but I mean, all in all, concierge services will definitely be needed coming out of this.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think it comes back to like when we're talking about other conversations with OTAs and direct bookings. And I think, you know, I love Marriott, for example, so I always reference them, but yeah. Is the fact of like, they always are pushing brand loyalty when it comes to the Bonvoy program and a few other things. But I think concierge add really to that loyalty feel. Like I feel more loyal because I have connected with a human on property that knows exact, not just like how to, you know, get to this good restaurant or whatever, but actually knows like the little hole in the walls and the unique like personal touches like you're talking about. So I think that's is pretty key to, like you said, what you just coming back into a creative way and obviously a safe way once we come out the other side of this. Yeah. Do you think the concierge stuff will become more virtual? Like, is that a thing that you think, like in a sense of communications and other things, but then still have that person ready to rock and roll when there's people on staff?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I mean, it was already kind of there to begin with as far as virtual in the sense that, you know, reaching out ahead of time during the stay, the texting capabilities, texting requests. So we were already kind of living in that space ahead of time or mm-hmm. prior to the pandemic. And I think that will definitely remain. But I don't think that that's the only way that we're going, because there are still, especially in like high-end luxury properties, those people that want to go to the concierge to help them find their Birkin bag, or they want to help them, you know, track down that really, really special Rolex that they're looking for. So it's like, there are things, or to get them into that restaurant that they can never get into. So in those really high-end properties, that luxury clientele, they expect a concierge. And so I think that you will really see in these high-end properties that they're not taking the concierge away. They can't. That their guests wouldn't know what to do without it, because it is so much a part of the experience. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
No, that's awesome. And how many, so like for a location like that or a destination with that type of clientele, how many concierge usually are on a property at once?
No, that's a great question. And again, it depends on properties. But I think a lot of it also depends on the room. So it depends on the number of rooms and then like the type of guests that you have. Mm-hmm. So I'm choosing my words wisely, carefully. So for example, like at the Peninsula in Beverly Hills, like they had 7 concierge. They had about 200-ish rooms. Just about 200 rooms, where you had the Beverly Wilshire Hotel in the heart of Beverly Hills, about 400 rooms, I think, 450. They had, at one point, they had 12 concierge, and that was like mind blowing. But then you take a look at like Vegas, and I've talked to people in Vegas, and they're like, we have 50 concierge on staff. I'm like, 50? That's an army of concierge. Whoa, that's incredible. So, you know, it all depends. I worked at a boutique property. It was a 4-star property, 225 rooms. And we had I call three and a half, so three and a part time, you know, to, because you had that floater to just kind of help in case people wanted to take time off, but in essence, three. So it really does depend. And I think also a lot of it kind of depends on the nature of the property, but then also like the skills of the concierge as well.
True. Okay. Good to know. Good to know. Now, I know we've been talking a little bit like industry insights, but I'm dying to hear if you have any crazy or like funny stories from your 15 years of concierge experience. Oh like, God. Is there one that you're just like, when you're with friends or family, you just have to tell them that, okay, this one story happened at this property or whatever?
Yeah. I mean, oh gosh, it's so, so this is what's interesting. And I'm sure you'll agree with this is that after you've been in the industry for some time, nothing surprises you. Like at the end, people would be like, oh, I have a tough one for you. And I'm like, I almost felt like I was like, what was it? Marge's sisters from The Simpsons, where I'd be like, yeah, yeah, whatever. Like surprise me, you know, obviously I was not doing that, but I mean, internally I was doing that. I was like, yeah, surprise me. Okay. But, what I have, so I have a couple of fun stories. I have ones where, okay. So one, this is one of my favorite stories just because it was so kind of cute and kind of crazy. I had a guest that was, it was in Los Angeles and they wanted to go to the Magic Castle. For those that don't know it, in Los Angeles, there's a place called the Magic Castle, which is, a members only magic event space basically. And so they have magicians, they have dinner's not that great, but lots of really great magic, and you can only get in by being invited. And so the person had asked, and I think it was something like around Valentine's Day, it was something weird that it was like just time was not on our side and we couldn't get him in. But I was like, hey, well, how about this, if you can't go to the Magic Castle, like maybe we can bring magic to you, would you be open to having an in-room magician come? Yeah, that's great. So next thing you know, I'm like interviewing magicians, like Googling, like figuring out, finding out like, okay, is sleight of hand, is there then like all the different types of like magic? And I'm like, okay. And then presenting it and then how much it would be. And then he chose one. And then it was like, oh, cool. Well, we're a pet friendly hotel, but didn't think about, is he allowed to bring like a rabbit and a dove? Cause that's now part of the whole magic show. And I remember having to go to the general manager and being like, so I was able to do this for the guest. And the general manager was like, amazing. And I'm like, yeah. So, is it okay if he brings his rabbit and his dove into the room? And the general manager just started laughing. He was like, yeah, we could do that. That's fine. But it was just this whole moment. And it ended up being such a special, memorable moment for the guest. And to be able to create that, you know, and it's also kind of ties into like, I was able to create magic, no pun intended.
Yeah. But, no.
But it was cool and it was funny. And I think for me, some of the fun moments were definitely, you know, obviously creating these really memorable moments for guests, but also these moments where you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just did that. Because like when you're in the zone, and I know that you get this, even though you weren't necessarily a concierge, like you were very much on the front lines, you know? And it's like, you get in this zone and the zone is you have to figure out a solution, whether it's a guest complaint, whether it's a request, whatever it is. And it's like, when you just like roll up your sleeves and you're like, we're gonna figure this out, and then you make it happen. Those moments are the ones that are really memorable for me, you know, where I'm really like, oh, okay, cool. That just happened. I can't believe that just happened. So yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, it plays totally into the times that we're in now, like, cause we can't, like a lot of people aren't able to go get that experience. So we have to kind of like, I know we've all been seeing, you know, hoteliers and restaurateurs like bringing the experience to them, like making to-go cocktail kits, and you can learn how to do it with the chef via a QR code in a video, like all these certain little things that you're able to bring the experience home or to you. I think that story plays perfectly with that and what we've been like adapting to as an industry as a whole.
Well, and that's the whole thing with concierge. I think probably one of the best traits of a good concierge is adaptability, because every day we're thrown something new, and arguably we have to make the impossible possible. And so that specific, I would say a trait more than maybe a skill, but a trait of being adaptable, being flexible, being like, okay, we're just going to figure it out. For those that really have that, they've been able to kind of make the best out of this year or this past year. So, you know, I think that that's also one of the, again, one of those key traits that like you want to have somebody on your staff that's adaptable. That's like, hey, we're going to figure it out. Oh, if I have to go upstairs and help like do a turn down for a room or do something, it's not the, oh, that's not my, in my job description or, oh, questioning. It's like, no, anything to get the job done. And that's, it's all about having the right attitude.
That's great. And it totally plays in with, again, just the overall flexibility of the year that we've had to overcome as an industry. I wanted to ask you on the sense of, do you think this is something that's going to, like, this is a positive thing that we can spin from this craziness that we've had? Like, do you think just what you're describing now, being able to be adaptable and flexible and not say, well, we've operated like this for 20 years. This is how the industry has always been. And just kind of taking that mindset out and just kind of applying it now, like, how can we do better? How can we make sure that we don't go back to like the, like even as hoteliers, the small profit margins and like the poor, whatever stuff that we were like all the connectivity issues with OTAs and PMSs and like, going to get me all wound up. Do you think that's something that we can turn into a positive for moving forward? And as we come out on the other side?
Totally. Totally. I mean, I think that really, you know, here's the thing. We all experienced this together and we all face challenges. They granted they've all been different, but it's been a challenging year for so many of us. And I think that the positive is that we've all been forced to come to terms with the fact that you have to expect the unexpected. And so with that mindset of expecting the unexpected, like that, I think that in and of itself is going to be so beneficial to us moving forward. You know, on the other hand, I also believe that in the short-term memory of humans. So I do feel like there might be a transition period. And next thing you know, we're also creatures of habit. So some changes that we have seen in this interim, we might move past pretty quickly. And then obviously some changes will be here to stay. So, I mean, I do foresee the future being very similar to what it was before. But then, you know, there'll just be, you know, certain key changes depending, you know, for example, you can look at TSA after 9/11, you know, like before that, like, you know, everybody could go to the airport. I think I did a scavenger hunt in the airport once. Anyway, so I guess I was always in my jeans to be part of it, the travel industry. But like, at, for example, after 9/11, you know, our whole travel experience changed. And now we expect to go through TSA and get checked. And that's normal. So, you know, I don't know what that specific thing will be, whether it is the cleanliness standards or what, but there's going to be something that will stick with us, you know, kind of moving forward. But then I think a majority of the travel experience will go back to looking like what it did before.
No, I hope you're right on the cleanliness standards part. That's the biggest thing. I'm like, yes, I know how exactly it's been cleaned. Thank God. Because that's always been, long story short. But no, for any, so my audience, from what I've gathered through surveys and just getting to know my listeners, is a lot of mix of hoteliers, restaurateurs, and even short-term rental managers or service providers. So a good mix of three pillars of hospitality. Any advice that you've just like personally have learned from this time or just from your years of experience and just being the amazing concierge that you are, what would you give any advice to any listeners that are in hospitality and want to continue to grow their professional career or business or whatever?
Yeah. I mean, I think, okay, well, it'll be a couple things because I can never decide on one thing. And maybe exactly. It's the concierge side of me that's always talking about give at least three options. So first of all, I would say don't underestimate human connection. At the end of the day, do not underestimate it, especially in this industry. The human connection, that is the cornerstone of hospitality. So it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter the building that you're in. That is the glue that puts it all together. So definitely human connection. The other thing is, which I had mentioned a bit before, is adaptability. Is that, hey, like you have to just kind of roll with it. and have that solutions oriented mindset. That's the most important thing. And then three is to just like never stop growing, because again, it is this, you're never going to know all the answers. First of all, there's no fun in that. But secondly, if you just always have to have that growth mindset, because every day you're going to be thrown a new challenge. And if you go at it with an open mind, a sense of curiosity, you're just going to set yourself up for success. So those are my three things.
Awesome. I'm pretty sure you can relate to, like, I don't know, recently, have you been like going to bed and your head just feels like it's throbbing because you're learning so much throughout the day?
There's so much going on. Yeah. Or I can't go to sleep because it's like thinking of all these different ideas, because a lot of times it's learning so much, but then it's inspiring new ideas as well.
Yeah. Oh, I feel it. My head's throbbing just thinking. No, that's awesome. Well, Sarah, I honestly think it's so cool what you're doing. Obviously, I've looked into your website, I looked into your social medias, I've like followed you from the moment I first, found out about you on LinkedIn. And so I just want to say thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you for bringing your energy to the podcast experience on Slick Talk here. It's been quite, what do you call it when it rubs off on you? It's quite exciting, and it's definitely rubbing off, and I could feel it through the screen. So I think it's super cool. Where can people find you? Just because even though I'm putting it in the show notes, everyone knows that. But where's everything at?
Absolutely. So for starters, you can just head to my website, which is askaconcierge.tv, or you can find me on social media pretty much everywhere as Ask a Concierge, or connect with me on LinkedIn as Sarah Dandashi. So by the way, Will, thank you so much for inviting me on and for letting me do this from Lisbon, by the way, as the sun was going down. For those of you that are watching the video version, you can see that the sun has gone down and I've been adjusting my light, but it's been so amazing to be here. And thank you again so much for having me on.
Of course. It's a true pleasure. We'll have to stay connected, and I'll see you in the club, AKA Clubhouse.
Yes, that's right.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And Slick Talkers, you can find everything in the show notes below. So feel free to check everything out, and we'll see you again next week.
Thank you so much for listening. We love your support and want to provide the best we can to all our listeners. So please find us online, social media, and on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Google Podcast.
What's up, everybody? If you've gotten this far into the episode of Slick Talk, the Hospitality Podcast, then you are amazing, and thank you so much for tuning in. We want to send you two places really quickly. If you can, check out the show notes and click the hospitality.fm link. Check out all of our other shows on the podcast network. And don't forget, if you have someone that you want to hear on the podcast, then fill out the guest fill out form so that way we can get them on the show. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy another episode of Slick Talk, the Hospitality Podcast.